This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news to be followed by Panorama. Today we shall close with our special feature on health and healing. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis held his midweek general audience on Wednesday, urging the faithful and pilgrims present in the Paul VI Hall at the Vatican to give migrants the same hospitality St. Paul received in Malta. His remarks were a reflection and dedication to the theme of this year's Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. It is based on St. Paul's dramatic experience of being shipwrecked at Malta and the welcome that he and his companions received there. Indeed, in contrast to the sea's violence, the Pope said, the survivors received unusual kindness. Pope Francis further exhorted the men and women of goodwill to promote and practice a culture of welcome, especially towards vulnerable migrants in search of a better life. He decried recent government policies that have seen migrant ships in the Mediterranean being denied access to a safe port. Christopher Wells reports.
Pope Francis urged men and women of goodwill to promote and practice a culture of welcome, especially towards vulnerable migrants in search of a better life. He decried recent government policies that have seen migrant ships in the Mediterranean being denied access to a safe port.
Tanti volte non li lasciano sbarcare nei porti.
Speaking during his general audience on Wednesday, the Pope referred to the passage in the Acts of the Apostles in which St. Paul is shipwrecked on the island of Malta. The Pope compared St. Paul and his companions to the migrants of today. The hospitality they received from the people of Malta, said the Pope, reflects the love of God. Pope Francis said that many times, just as Paul and his companions did, those who are traveling experience indifference, the hostility of the desert, the rivers, the seas. Many times, he said, they don't allow them to dock in ports.
Sperimentano l'indifferenza, l'ostilità del deserto. Dei fiumi, dei mari.
The theme chosen for this year's Week of Prayer for Christian Unity is hospitality. Being brothers and sisters in Christ, the Pope said, means recognizing each other as such. Only in this way, he continued, can hospitality become an important ecumenical virtue. God's love is reflected through considerate gestures. St. Paul and his companions were given shelter from the rain. They were given food and fire to keep warm. Upon reaching land, said Pope Francis, they experienced something new, this rare humanity after the violence of the ocean.
E lì sperimentano qualcosa di nuovo. In contrasto con la brutale violenza del mare in tempesta, ricevono la rara umanità degli abitanti dell'isola.
Ecumenical hospitality, continued Pope Francis, requires the desire to know what experience other Christians have of God. As Christians, we must learn to work together to show migrants God's love. We must bear witness to the fact that each and every person is precious to God and loved by Him.
Ma che ogni persona è preziosa per Dio e amata da Lui.
Finally, Pope Francis urged the faithful to work together to practice hospitality.
Lavorare insieme per vivere l'ospitalità ecumenica.
Especially towards those whose lives are most vulnerable. As this will make us better human beings, better disciples, and a more united Christian people. I'm Christopher Wells.
At the end of his general audience on Wednesday, Pope Francis greeted all those who mark the new year according to the traditional Chinese calendar. Also referred to as the Spring Festival in mainland China, the Chinese New Year is one of the several lunar New Years of Asia. It is celebrated by ethnic Chinese and non-Chinese people worldwide. It begins with the first new moon of the lunar calendar and ends on the first full moon of the lunar calendar 15 days later. The New Year is dedicated to the rat. In his remarks at the end of the general audience, the Pope noted that on 25th January next, in the Far East and in various other parts of the world, many millions of men and women will celebrate the Lunar New Year. I send them my cordial greetings, wishing them in particular to be places of education in the virtues of welcome, wisdom, respect for each person, and harmony with creation, he said. He concluded by inviting all to pray also for peace, dialogue, and solidarity among nations, gifts which are so necessary in the world, he said. The Catholic bishops of Southern Africa are gathering at the St. John Vianney Seminary in Pretoria for their January Plenary Assembly. One of the highlights of the bishops' meeting will be the launching of the pastoral plan for the next couple of years for the Catholic Church in Southern Africa. Announcing the plenary of the bishops' conference not too long ago, Bishop Thembele Spuka of Mthatha Diocese, who is also president of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference, said that the unveiling of the new pastoral plan will take place on 26th January 2020 in a ceremony at the Regina Mundi Catholic Church in Soweto. In his keynote address at the opening of the plenary this week, Bishop Spuka mentions a number of key issues affecting the region, including the problem of unemployment, violence against women and children, and poverty. Father Patrick Rekeketsi is the Associate General Secretary of the Bishops Conference of Southern Africa. In a special interview with Sheila Piresh of Radio Veritas, Father Rekeketsi reacts to the opening address of the President of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, Bishop Spuka.
Very contextual, very precise and concise. He has addressed the issues which are pertinent to our life today, and we are even taking the whole thing towards, the society at large. Not only us as a church, not only the bishops, but he's also talking to the other leaders of the world, in the business and also political leaders. We are talking about where is our nation going, how can we sustain this democracy that we have today. Can we just delegate every leadership style and leadership authority to politicians, or do we actually need to take our own space and give a direction to the people? This is what he has addressed the bishop about, and they are going to deliberate more on his speech.
Father Patrick Rekeketsi, Associate General Secretary of the Bishops Conference of Southern Africa, reacting to the opening address of the President of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference. 36 civilians were killed on Monday in the Burkina Faso province of Samatenga. The government said in a statement on Tuesday that armed militants attacked people in the market of the village of Alamu before burning it to the ground. Linda Bodoni tells us more.
The bloodshed is part of a surge in violence in the West African country that has killed hundreds, forced nearly a million from their homes, and made much of the north ungovernable over the past 2 years. Pope Francis and the Catholic bishops of Burkina Faso have called for the promotion of interreligious dialogue in an attempt to protect the people and find solutions to the violence. Meanwhile, the government in Ouagadougou released a statement saying these repeated attacks on innocent civilians called for real cooperation between defence and security forces. President Roch Marc Kabore called for 2 days of national mourning in response to the attack. Although it was not immediately clear who was responsible for the massacre, Islamist groups with links to Al-Qaeda and to so-called Islamic State have carried out increasingly brazen attacks against civilian and military targets in Burkina Faso in recent months, including an attack on a mining convoy in November that killed almost 40 people. The country was once a pocket of relative calm in the Sahel region, but the recent local insurgency has been amplified by a spillover of jihadist violence and criminality from Mali on Burkina Faso's northern border. I'm Linda Bordoni.
A new report by Oxfam International has revealed that the hidden engine of the world economy is driven by the unpaid care work of women and girls. The report shows that just over 200 individual billionaires control more money than 60% of the world's poor population combined. The report says further that it is the underpaid or even unpaid work done by the world's poorest women that generates enormous wealth for the global economy. Oxfam focuses on poverty alleviation, and its report, published just before the start of the 21st to 24th January World Economic Forum in Davos in Switzerland, shows highlights of the fact that underpaid and unpaid work by women and girls adds three times more to the global economy each year than the whole technology industry put together. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Authorities in northern Nigeria's Kano State have confirmed an outbreak of Lassa fever. Four people have died from the outbreak, including two medical staff who performed surgery on an infected patient. Lassa fever is caused by a virus and infects humans through exposure to food or household items contaminated with the urine or feces of infected rats. According to the World Health Organization, the disease is endemic in the rodent population in parts of West Africa, and unfortunately, there is no vaccine to prevent it. Parliament in Burundi has voted to pay more than $500,000 to President Pierre Nkurunziza as he prepares to leave office. Mr. Nkurunziza has promised not to run for another term in the general elections scheduled for May this year. The draft law will also award him a lifetime salary, housing, and the same benefits as a sitting vice president. The MPs also proposed that Mr. Nkurunziza be elevated to the title of supreme leader and champion of patriotism. Mr. Nkurunziza is a former rebel leader. He was the second president in Burundi to be chosen in a democratic election. He was elected in 2005 after the end of a brutal civil war. In 2015, however, Burundi was plunged into another crisis when Nkurunziza decided to stand for another term of office that many thought was unconstitutional. Reports from Zimbabwe say junior doctors have agreed to return to work and end a strike that has lasted for over 4 months after a Zimbabwean telecom billionaire offered to pay their allowances. The strike was one of the longest in the country's history, and it brought the public healthcare system on its knees. The billionaire by the name of Strive Masiyiwa will pay each doctor a subsistence allowance of about $300 and provide them with transport to work through a fund he will set up. Most of the doctors on strike were earning less than $100 a month. The billionaire will fund the doctors for 6 months, but it is not clear what will happen after that. The president of Burkina Faso, Roch Marc Christian Kabore, has declared 2 days of national mourning beginning Wednesday after two separate attacks that killed at least 36 people in Sematenga province. The militants first attacked Nagarago market, killing 32 people and setting the market on fire. According to the government, they then attacked Alamao and killed 4 more people. Parliament on Tuesday passed a bill allowing civilian volunteers to join the fight against Islamic militants in the country. Violence perpetrated by Islamic militants has been escalating in Burkina Faso since January 2018. And lastly, the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, has blamed African countries for failing to protect Libya against military intervention by the United States and a NATO-led coalition in March 2011. Mr. Museveni told the BBC that African countries should have put up a military resistance to teach a lesson to Western powers. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio. And now, our feature, Health and Healing. The World Health Organization, the WHO, has released the results of a study it carried out in a partnership with the other agencies on quitting smoking. The study shows that smokers who give up tobacco prior to a minor or a non-emergency operation or surgery are less likely to experience complications after. Diane Penn reports.
Patients who smoke face significantly higher risks of complications following surgery, including impaired heart and lung functions, infections, and delayed or impaired wound healing. However, the study found risks are lowered if they quit smoking approximately 4 weeks or more before surgery due to improved blood flow to essential organs. The authors explained that smoking decreases the body's ability to heal after surgery. Cigarettes contain nicotine and carbon monoxide, both of which can lower oxygen levels while also greatly increasing the risk of heart-related complications after surgery. The study was conducted by the World Health Organization, WHO, together with the University of Newcastle in Australia and the World Federation of Societies of Anesthesiologists, the WFSA. Dr. Vinayak Prasad, head of WHO's No Tobacco Unit, said the study provides evidence that there are advantages to postponing minor or non-emergency surgery to give patients the opportunity to quit smoking, resulting in a better health outcome. Deanne Penn, UN News.
And now, fistula. An obstetric fistula is a hole that develops between a woman's birth canal, commonly known as the vaginum, and the rectum or bladder as a result of prolonged and complicated labor. Women with this condition develop a strong smell and are often ostracized from their communities. Dr. Bata Omel is a physician. He explains more.
Obstetric fistula is a condition that is caused by a prolonged labor, which then causes a hole between the birth canal and the bladder, so that you find that the ladies tend to then leak urine through the birth canal. Or it can actually be a hole between the birth canal and the rectal passage. So they tend to pass feces through the same. And it is a very nasty thing.
Is this occurring in any particular area more so than others?
Well, it is linked to poverty in many countries. And we find that it happens in Africa and in Asia and some parts of Latin America. So it's an issue of poverty.
What has changed in this area? Is there anything new that UNFPA is doing to help end obstetric fistula?
Yes, UNFPA is doing several things. Training more nurses and more health workers close to where people live so that they don't have to travel long distances before they get the service. We're also encouraging, as UNFPA, pregnant women to be attended to during pregnancy. We recommend that every pregnant woman should have at least 3 or 4 antenatal visits. That enables the health worker to assess what the possibilities are for the woman to be able to deliver properly.
But isn't that kind of difficult for most women?
In some parts of Africa where this has happened, and India, we've seen that we don't need to have a midwife that is super qualified. You know, you can actually train a care of staff over a short period of time to be able to deliver good quality service under supervision for this to happen. So if, in fact, you train people with midwifery skills that actually live in communities next to the people they serve, you can limit, almost eliminate this.
Dr. Bata Omel, a physician, speaking there to Jerry Adams. And finally, the relationship between pneumonia and cardiovascular disease, also known as heart disease. Pneumonia is an inflammatory condition of the lung, affecting primarily the small air sacs known as alveoli. According to medical research, it has serious effects on the heart. Dr. Alice Medina is a heart specialist. He explains more.
Both pneumonia and cardiovascular disease are leading causes of morbidity and mortality worldwide. Both pneumonia and cardiovascular disease tend to affect the same populations, such as, for instance, the elderly, and that both conditions commonly coexist in the same patient. As population continues to age, we can expect that this association will become even more prominent. We also know that a significant proportion of patients with pneumonia, as much as 27% of those hospitalized with this infection, have a major cardiac complication within the first 30 days after the diagnosis of pneumonia. And we know that it is during the first few days of this period when the risk of cardiac complications is the highest. We know that new or worsening heart failure is the most common cardiac complication in patients with pneumonia, with other cardiac events such as new or worsening cardiac arrhythmias or myocardial infarction occurring less frequently. We know that cardiac complications are responsible for about one-third of clinical failures to medical treatment in patients with pneumonia, about one-third of pneumonia-associated deaths, and about one-quarter of hospital readmissions after hospitalization for pneumonia. And finally, we know that having a cardiac complication increases the short-term risk of death of patients with pneumonia by as much as 60%. So the burden of cardiac complications in patients with pneumonia is very significant.
Pneumonia is usually caused by infection with viruses or bacteria. Dr. Medina explains the effects it has on the cardiovascular system.
Pneumonia can have a detrimental effect on almost every element of the cardiovascular system, and that includes the myocardium, the conduction system of the heart, the autonomic function of the heart, the coronary arteries, the vascular endothelium and the peripheral arteries, the pulmonary circulation, the coagulation system, the renal function and balance of sodium and fluids, and probably even the very composition of atherosclerotic plaques. We also know that each of these effects can present at a higher or lesser degree at all severities of the infection, and that they are not necessarily restricted to those cases of severe pneumonia. However, the specific significance of these effects in the development of cardiac complications in the setting of pneumonia is still largely unknown. Since cardiac complications have a negative effect on the course of pneumonia, it is plausible that medications that affect the cardiovascular system and reduce the risk of cardiovascular events may have a rather beneficial impact on the outcomes of patients with pneumonia. In fact, evidence from several large observational studies suggests that drugs such as, for instance, aspirin or inhibitors of the angiotensin-converting enzyme or statins can reduce the short-term mortality and improve the outcomes of patients with pneumonia.
And lastly, Dr. Medina recommends the following measures to control pneumonia and its effects on the human heart.
Clinicians and public health officials need to optimize rates of influenza and pneumococcal vaccination to prevent the development of pneumonia, especially in elderly patients and individuals with chronic cardiac conditions. Also, because of the significant burden of cardiac complications in patients with pneumonia, a thorough clinical investigation for the presence of these complications should be part of the initial and the follow-up assessments of patients with pneumonia, with a special attention, of course, to patients with clustering of risk factors for cardiac disease. On the same token, a high index of suspicion for cardiac complications should be applied, especially in the setting of suboptimal clinical response to pneumonia treatment. I would say that a special attention should also be paid to the selection of specific antibiotics. For example, antibiotics with known potential for causing cardiac arrhythmias, such as macrolides or fluoroquinolones, should be used with caution in patients with a prolonged QT interval in their electrocardiograms, and more so when there are other arrhythmogenic drugs that are being used or there are electrolyte disorders such as hypokalemia or hypomagnesemia. It would be also important that in patients with signs of volume overload, and especially in those with a history of pre-existing heart failure, antibiotic alternatives with high sodium contents and high infusion volumes, such as penicillin or piperacillin tazobactam, should probably be avoided. And finally, patients' immunization status against influenza and pneumococcus, the cardiovascular risk profile, and the cardiovascular medications should be thoroughly reviewed and updated with the patient. patient as appropriate at the moment of hospital discharge after hospitalization for pneumonia. We need to acknowledge that pneumonia is capable of affecting, in a detrimental way, essential elements of the cardiovascular system at all severities of the infection. Another conclusion would be that cardiac complications are remarkably common in patients with pneumonia, and that the occurrence of these complications has a very negative impact on the course of patients with pneumonia. Also, that because of these facts, it is plausible that interventions aimed at preventing the development of or the progression of these complications can improve the outcome of patients with pneumonia. However, before such targeted interventions can be designed and properly tested, a better understanding of the mechanistic pathways underlying this association is needed. Meanwhile, clinicians should be aware of the importance of this association, and that should be taken into account when they provide care for patients with pneumonia.
That was Dr. Alice Medina, a heart specialist. And with that, we come to the end of this week's edition of Health and Healing. This has been Johnny Baptist Tomosime.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetu Jesus Christus. Apingilam Sioni.